I just turned it on. Oh, I forget. Okay. I think I have everything turned on. Like I said, I'm happy to be here this evening to be able to speak with y'all. I'm a little bit nervous. Okay. Not a lot. Which, it's great whenever everybody asks me if I'm nervous before I come up here. Just saying no. it's really okay. I want to ask a question tonight. Why do you believe in God? And that's a probably for everybody in this congregation. You can probably answer that question. Why do you believe in God? We can look right here in His Word, and we can look at what it says, and it can teach us in His Son. A couple of verses.
Go the
wrong way. John chapter 20. At the end of chapter 20, verse 30, said, "And truly Jesus did many other signs in the presence of His disciples, which are not written in His book. But these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you may have life in His name." This, obviously, John is talking about the book of John, but this whole Bible, everything in here, is written so that we can believe in Jesus Christ, and that we can have life through His name. Chapter 3, starting in verse 16. "All scripture is given by inspiration of God, and is profitable for doctrine, for reproof, for correction, for instruction in righteousness, that the man of God may be complete, thoroughly equipped for every good work." Everything in here is, some versions say God breathed, that the words came out of God's mouth through the apostles and the prophets and His disciples. But it's from God. And we know that. And we can believe in this book that Jesus is the Son of God. We can believe in God because of what it says in here. But I want to ask you another question. I'm actually going to ask probably a lot of questions tonight on the screen. What if we didn't believe in the Bible? In this Bible? And what I mean by that is, most people in here either were raised in a Christian home and grew up believing in the Bible, or at some point in your life, somebody taught you about what the Bible says. And if you didn't have one of those blessings in your life, that you raised like as a Christian by your parents, or that somebody came along and showed you what this says, then could you still come to believe in God if it was not for those things? Without this word, could you see a God? I think the answer is yes. If you turn over to Romans chapter 1, we're going to start there. Romans chapter 1, starting verse 18, says, "For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men, who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. Because what they know that God is manifest in them, for God has shown it to them. For since the creation of the world, His invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even His eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse." So, we can come to believe in God. We can come to believe in His eternal power and Godhead, His power which is greater than any other power, and that He is the head of this world, who created this world. We can come to believe that through His invisible attributes. And we see His invisible attributes in the things that He made, through the things that He made. So, tonight, I want to answer the question of how do we see God in the things that He made? So, we have two pictures here of rocks. What is the difference between these two rocks? Well, the bottom one has a design, okay? You can see the design. You can see that those heads didn't get on that rock by themselves, okay? Some men designed that rock to look like four of our presidents, okay? Design is how we can see God in the things that He made. We can see the things that He made have a design. They didn't just happen on accident. They didn't just happen to turn out the way they did. He designed it the way that it is, and because of that, we can see it in the glass. We can see His eternal power, and we can see His Godhead. At three different ways that we can see God's design in creation. The way we see God's design in creation is similar to the way we see man's design. We see things that man designed, and we can tell based off of certain things that was a design. Man made that. It didn't just happen to be like that. Three ways. Number one, beauty. So I got a picture here of a nice chandelier. When I thought of something beautiful that man made, I thought of a chandelier. I don't know why I thought that. But it's very intricate. You can tell that it didn't just end up like that. But it's a man designed that and it's beautiful because he designed it. I asked Lauren, can you give me a picture of a beautiful dress? And she said, this is a cute dress, not a beautiful dress. But I put it up there anyway. God's faces aren't cute, I don't think, but this dress is cute and beautiful. And you can tell by the things that are on it, someone might say it's beautiful or cute. And you can tell through that there's a design that went into this dress. And it's beautiful, and someone can tell that. So, what about God's creation is beautiful? Lauren's grandmother and Stephen's mother, Gan Gan is her name. It's not her name, it's... her name is Linda. You all probably know her, but anyway, she likes to paint. Okay, she likes to paint on canvases, okay? She paints real nice pictures. A lot of them are landscapes, pictures that Stephen takes when he's on vacation in California or wherever he is. But she paints on the canvas, and the Lord has different canvases that He paints on. He paints on the canvas of the sky, which is sunsets. And on the land, we see beautiful mountains, and we see lakes, and we see, that's a picture of Niagara Falls, beautiful things in nature. And the stars. I don't know if those are big enough, y'all see. I guess they are. But God has His own canvas, which is the whole world, the sky, the water, the land, the heavens. Okay? That is God's beauty. And when we look at those things, in my opinion, and maybe people differ, it's hard not to see that somebody must have created these things because they're so beautiful. But as people say sometimes, beauty can be deceiving. So can we just believe in God because the things He created are pretty? Well, I think another way that we can see God's design is size. So, what do you mean by size? Let's look at a couple of man-made things. This is the Burj Khalifa, which is the tallest building in the world. 2,722 feet tall. If you came, and I'd never been there, but I would imagine if you went and stood at the bottom of it and looked up, you probably couldn't even see the top. I've been to CN Tower in Canada, and it's pretty, it's not as tall as this, but it's pretty tall, and if you fall backwards looking at it, wow, how could somebody design this huge thing? But you can tell that it was designed by some man, and he put it there. Okay? Or, on the other spectrum, about this little thumb drive, about the size of a dime. And I think this one says it holds like 128 gigabytes, right? And it's only this big, it's as big as a dime. That's incredible. Someone must have designed that so that it can fit all that information in just this little tiny area. But what about, what is God, what has He made? So that is the sun, and right beside it is the earth. That's real tiny compared to the sun. We're on earth, obviously. So that big tall tower of Burj Khalifa that we just looked at a minute ago is nothing at all compared to the earth at all, and then compared to the sun, which is, I'll tell you, 1,300,000 times bigger than the earth. You can fit that many earths in the sun. Okay? And if you want to take this even farther, UY Scuti, which is the biggest star apparently known to man, which I guess they just started running out of names because that's a weird name. But this looks like some of the big stars, so that's understandable. Now they just let you pick your own names and name stars after your friends or whatever. But anyway, so as you can see, on the top picture, you can't even see how big the sun is compared to that. And here, this little dot right there is the sun. Obviously, the sun is, this is how big that star is. It's not even, we can't even fathom how big that is. Okay? But that's what God created. Much greater than 2,722 feet of that first belief of. Is. Okay? By the way, 5 billion suns can fit into that star, which is the biggest one. Okay, so let's see. Alright? On the other side, God made gigantic cubes, unfathomably big stars, okay? But on the small side, that's DNA. I don't know. Most people probably know that. And this part of what I'm talking about is a little bit scientific, and I don't want to bore anybody, but I guarantee you that everything I'm talking about is, I can understand it, so you can understand it too. It's not really complicated stuff. So, DNA, that just to explain to you how small DNA is in the first place, that probably has 37.2 trillion cells. That's a number I found on a couple of different places. They're not 100% sure about that, if that's the exact number, except or not, because everybody varies, obviously. But, just to get us to realize how small this stuff is, 37.2 trillion cells, okay? Your body is made up of. Each cell inside of it has a nucleus, okay? And then inside of that nucleus, there are 46 chromosomes, okay? So we're getting smaller as we go. Each chromosome is made up of the strands of the DNA, okay? And the genes, everybody knows about the genes, you know, they make you who you are, basically. They are little tiny pieces of your DNA, okay? The amount of information in our DNA is enough to fill 12 sets of Encyclopedia Britannica, which is, 12 sets of Encyclopedia Britannica is 384 volumes. And that would fill 48 feet of library shelf. I don't know if y'all know what Encyclopedia Britannica is over there. But it's basically the stuff that came from the internet that's been there. The point is, it's full of information, is what the encyclopedia is full of information. And in one cell, in one chromosome of the nucleus of that cell, there's that much information, 48 feet of library shelves. That's That's small. Okay? That really beats 128 gig flash drive, okay? That's the size of a dime. Okay, so the information is a code in your DNA, okay? And it's complex enough to be called its own language. Basically, your DNA makes up who you are, and it's its own language, it's a code. Okay, and don't let it be called a language by standards that are set by whoever is the language people. It has to contain an alphabet or coding system. It has to have correct spelling. It has to have correct grammar, which means proper regular words. It has to have meaning. And it has to have an intended purpose. Now, our DNA has all those things. I can't go into all those things. Number one, because I probably don't even understand everything, how that works. I know that y'all don't want to listen to everything about how that works. But, if you do your own research, you would find, from what I have found, is that our DNA is a language. And it tells us who we are. And it tells us about our eye color, about our hair color. Everything about us is written by God in each one of ourselves. God did make each one of us unique. Nobody has the same DNA. At that point, I heard possibly identical twins have the same DNA, but some people said they didn't. But either way, the point is that God has a design inside of everybody, inside of you, and it tells you exactly who you are and how you're made up. Okay? The third way that I think we can see design is through provision. The way that men use provision, the way they provide for the future, would be in ways like you have a savings account, you put money away for a rainy day, you're providing for the future if something would happen. Okay, or at any place that has required power, you have a backup generator in case the first generator goes out and you don't have any power. They make provisions for what happens whenever the power goes out and they have a backup generator. Or to parents who have children, you have provisions for your children. You start calls on for them, for their baby, and eventually that gets used for them to go to college. But they're providing for the future whenever the future will be called. Okay? So, everybody would say these are good things, they're smart things, that whoever has the savings account or backup generator or college fund is planning for the future. They have a design and a plan that's going to come useful at some time. God's provision, I believe, is much more important, and we see it. I'm going to read to you a couple of things about God's provision. I think God's provision is more better called wisdom. Okay? In Ephesians chapter 3, verse 10, it says, "To the intent that now the manifold wisdom of God might be made known by the church." So we can see God's wisdom in the church. And I think we can also, in the same way, see his wisdom in the way that he makes our world and how it keeps us alive. So the earth. Let me just read you some statistics about the earth. I don't want to really bore anybody, but these are things that, if the things that I'm reading were not the way they were, we wouldn't be able to survive. And God made it that way so that we can survive. Earth is the only planet we know of that can support life. And no other planet has the green vegetation as it is covered in as much water as the Earth is. The Earth orbits around the Sun, as most people know. But if the orbit of the Earth around the Sun was a little bit faster, then we would eventually move away from the Sun and we would die without the Sun that close. If we were orbiting around the Sun a little bit slower, then we would eventually move closer to the Sun, and we would die in that case also. It takes exactly 365 days, 6 hours, 49 minutes, and 9.54 seconds to orbit around the sun. That's our year. And it takes that exact time every single year. Because that's the way that God made it. That is how long it will take every single year. And if that wasn't the case, stuff would get thrown off. If the earth was, so you know how on a globe, it's kind of tilted to the side. If the world was sitting up straight at 90 degree angle, instead of 23 degree angle, which it actually is at, then we wouldn't have our four seasons. And if that happens, eventually, life would not be able to exist because the seasons bring about, you know, fall, you get your food and you harvest and everything like that. We would run out of, we would all die eventually. 70% of the earth is covered in water, and the water that's all over the earth, during the day, it soaks up all the sun's rays. It soaks up the heat. And if we didn't have that much water to soak up all the heat, we would all burn up because of the heat of the sun. On the other side, whenever it's nighttime, the ocean lets the heat go, and it warms the earth so that we don't freeze at night. Again, if we didn't have the exact amount of water we have on the earth, we wouldn't be able to survive because of those things. So basically, the earth that we live on, it's perfect. God made it exactly the way that it needs to be made. So how about the sun? Okay, we talked about the sun earlier. The sun is one of 100 billion stars in our galaxy, and it is the exact one that we need. It warms our planet, obviously, because we feel a little warm from the sun. It gives energy to our plants, which is two good things for us. One is the plants, we eat the plants. We have to harvest the plants. So without the energy from the sun, plants wouldn't be able to grow, and we wouldn't have food. Also, helps us breathe, because the energy from the sun goes into plants, and they convert the carbon dioxide into oxygen, which we breathe. We cannot breathe carbon dioxide. Then we got a couple of quick ones here. Many stars in the universe are too hot to support life on the Earth. Many of them are too cold to support life on the Earth. Many stars vary from hot to cold too much to support life on the Earth. Many stars are too big or too small to support life on the Earth. If the sun was a little bit closer, we would burn up, and if it was a little bit farther away, we would freeze. The sun has the exact right brightness that we need to provide for life on the earth. It gives off the right amount of energy in the right amounts and right types in order to provide life on the earth. Most of the stars in the universe are not fit to keep people alive on the earth. But the star that we have for our sun is exactly what we need. And I don't think that's an accident. There's a design. God designed our earth the way it is so that we could live. And God designed the sun the way it is so that we could live on this earth. So, looking at these three things, the beauty that we can see God's design in that. The size of things that God has made, how big they are, how small DNA is inside us that tells us exactly who we are. And the provision that God has made through how we made our earth, how we made our sun. And I'll tell you, I read through so much stuff. There's so many more things like those facts I just told you that So much more that show that God designed everybody the way they need to be. He designed our earth. He designed the animals the way they need to be. Perfect, so that we can have life here on this earth. Now, this is But Sean just read a minute ago. And he asked me before he came up here, he was like, do you have a specific verse you want me to read? And I was like, no, you can just do whatever you want. And somehow it ended up being this verse that I was just about to read. Isaiah chapter 40, I guess I won't read it all. I'm going to read it all. if you listen, as he was reading through that, he talks about how God made the earth. Okay? He weighed the mountains in his scales. The mountains that are far bigger than, you know, any scales we could balance the mountain by. He measured the waters in the hollow of his hand right here. Okay? Basically, this world was created by God in the city. And in the second half of what he read was that no one, who is going to compare to God? We can't compare. No one can compare to the Lord. No one. I wanted to read one more verse. And that's Psalm 19. If you turn it over there. Psalm 19, starting in verse 1. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows his handiwork. Day unto day utters speech, and night unto night reveals knowledge. There is no speech, nor language, where their voice is not heard. Their line has gone out through all the earth, and their words to the end of the world. In them he has set a tabernacle for the sun, which is the bridegroom coming out of his chamber, and rejoices like a strong man to run his race. Its rising is from the end of heaven, and its circuit to the other end, and there is nothing hidden from its heat. So he's talking a little bit about our sun, how it goes up and it comes down, and it always does that. God made it that way. The heavens declare the glory of God. All these things that we looked at, we don't look at those, we shouldn't look at those and say, that's nice and pretty, that's great. These provisions that God has made for us, they're great, but I'm going to go about my life and just because I don't care that much about God. As it talks about you, the heavens declare the glory of God. And as you continue in verse 7, all this stuff is supposed to be pointing us to something. All 1 through 6 is supposed to be pointing us to starting in verse 7. The law of the Lord is perfect, converting the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. The statutes of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of the Lord are true, and righteous altogether. What is to be desired are they in gold, yea, they must find gold. Sweet are also the honey and the honeycomb. The stuff that's talking about 1 through 6, the heavens declare the glory of God, everything he made, his creation, declaring his glory, is supposed to point us right here to what he says in his word. The law of the Lord, the testimony of the Lord, the statutes of the Lord, the commandments of the Lord, the fear of the Lord, the judgments of the Lord, all those are pointing us to that, to this. Okay? And in verse 11, in verse 11 of Psalm 19, moreover, by them your servant is warned, and in keeping them is a great reward. God's creation points us here. And it points us to the law of the Lord, to his commandments. And it says in verse 11, by his commandments, we're warned. His word tells us what we have to do. And it tells us that we have a chance to be with God one day in heaven if we follow His commands. But it also says that we're warned by them. It warns us of what happens if we don't look around and see God's glory, and if we just say, that's okay, I don't see God's design there. I think it got there somehow, some other way, and I'm not going to follow God's word. In Romans chapter 1, it says that they are without excuse, those people who knew God, but they did not honor Him with God. Because they knew Him because they could see. They could look around and they could see God's, His handiwork, His creation, His design, but they didn't honor Him with God. So they were without excuse. And by His word, they were warned. But in keeping God's commandments is a great reward. If we can see what God says for us here in His word, in keeping His commandments, there's a great reward. We have a reward. We can go home and be with Him in heaven one day. If you are here tonight and you have already become a Christian and you are struggling, if you need any help, any prayers from the congregation, then we are here to help you with that. If you haven't, then let me tell you what. Because of God's creation and because of what it says right here, you don't have any excuse to not be a child of God, to not follow Him. There's no excuses, and this is your warning, right here in the Bible, that you have to follow the Lord because He is the only one who can offer you salvation, that can offer you a chance to go to heaven. If you keep this reward, then if you keep His commandments, then you have a great reward. If there's any way that we can help anyone tonight, please come.